From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to a special pledge edition of The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson. His new film is There Will Be Blood, an adaptation of Upton Sinclair's Oil. P.T., thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
I should ask you to tell the audience what the movie's about.
The movie is about an independent oil prospector named Daniel Plainview and his battle with a young preacher named Eli Sunday, his battle with himself and the relationship that he has with his young adopted son, H.W.
The book's very much about that sort of distance between he and his son and having that third-person narration. And you chose to not have narration here or have a narrator commenting on things.
Right. Well, quite honestly, I never felt or realized that I was officially going to adapt the book. I kind of felt like I had this enormous amount of material, the book being one thing. Other bits and pieces of a script that I had been working on.
What was that script?
It was a script about fighting families, too. It was sort of a, you know, Hatfields and McCoy, but it didn't really have anything. There was nothing. I was just sort of fishing for something. I just had a premise. But I had a couple good characters and a couple good bits of dialogue, but not much else. In addition to that, I had tons and tons of photographs of the oil fields in California, and so I felt like I was pulling from all these different sources, my imagination as well, and you're just sort of mixing all those things together. And I never really felt like I was attacking it as a straight adaption. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had enough scenes from the book where I felt like, you know, I owe this book a lot to have gotten us where we got. I mean, then I went about getting the rights to it, which is kind of funny. Really, it was, the whole thing was sort of ass backwards.
You can't really call it an adaptation because you use chunks of it, but mm-hmm. it's not ordered the same way the book is at all. I mean, right. it's much more chronological and sort of builds on that unspoken bond between the two, between father and son. And I wondered about those scenes at the very beginning when he's traveling with his infant son and there's no dialogue between them. That, to me, seems like the most daunting thing to do because you're relying on an enormous amount of audience identification given we don't really know, or for the audience, they don't really know what his motives are.
It was very undaunting. It was completely liberating. It was great to do things without dialogue. I can't tell you the pleasure we had in cutting dialogue out. You know, it's very easy to overwrite when you're alone in your room. You know, you're always going to kind of make a little bit more out of it than you need to. And I suppose that's probably a good idea to kind of walk into a set armed with a little bit more than you might need. But I know I've been guilty in the past of not being able to recognize what didn't need to be there, you know. And Daniel's a pretty terrific editor in that way, too.
You kind of read
Daniel Day-Lewis. When you get him out on the road, you realize how little you do need. He just brings so much just by looking at him.
One of the things that I was so struck by in this, and I think you may have gotten even the spirit of a lot of this from the book, is that you talked about confidence. And a lot of that dialogue comes from people who know exactly what they want to say and don't waste any words, unlike your characters who are often in the past trying to explain themselves and not being any good at it.
Yeah. It is really fun to write for people that know exactly what they're after. It comes quite easy because of the initial introduction to it, or the kind of the collaboration with the Upton Sinclair book. I really felt like it was like working with a collaborator, like somebody who was really kind of guiding it to begin with. You know, I took that opening speech of Upton Sinclair's, and the only thing that I did to it was to take the accent off it. You know, drilling was, he would do drilling, you know. There was a real kind of character to it. And I took that out only because I didn't want to impose an accent or dialect, you know, onto an actor. But to see it in black and white, to sort of type it out on my own and transcribe it, it was cheap, but it really sort of helped me sort of say, well, God, look at how direct this writing is. Look how direct this language is. He's really clear about what he's trying to say.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson. We're talking about his new film, There Will Be Blood, an adaptation of Upton Sinclair's Oil. But even in the narration, there is a kind of simplicity and a sort of pointedness in that and descriptions that are kind of digressive. And you pared all that away just so everything sort of points to these explorations of character, mostly through action. I mean, I'm reminded as much as kind of like a Walter Hill and early Truffaut as I am of anything else I've seen that you've done before.
Yeah. For whatever reason, that was the approach. Probably whether it was something that I thought would be a kind of great way to tell this story, or it's just something that I felt like I could do better, you know, kind of stripping things down to their just the essentials. I mean, one thing we used to do in the editing room was every Wednesday night we would get steak and vodka only, you know, no sides, no soda for the vodka. Because we were constantly reminding ourselves, like, this is what the film should be.
Is this a plain view? Yeah,
this is like, you know, it's a plain view. You know, you thought, like, we've got to get inside his head. And it's his story, I guess. Maybe that's the other thing in kind of film language. You want to say, well, it's his story.
Except in the last third, it becomes the story of the other two sons. I feel. I mean, it's his story for a good chunk of it. And at the point at which you've gone in terms of his evolution as far as he can go, and we see him close off, then we're watching him from outside a bit, aren't we? Or are we?
I never saw it that way. I mean, perhaps it feels that way because he is so far gone. The further he gets from any kind of sanity, probably the more and more you end up objectifying him.
But the further also he gets away from that thing that he's good at, being in the land with his hands.
That's it. Yeah, there you go. You helped me out, because that's exactly it. It was obvious in looking around at these stories that these guys that started as silver prospectors were at the tail end of the wild, wild west. I mean, they were part of a fever and part of, you know, the possibility of guns going off at any moment. And that as they bridged into the 20th century, it was really quite difficult for them to kind of leave that behind. Or here they were, they amassed this enormous wealth, but they missed what they were really after the whole time, which was the game, the effort, the fever. What good were they? Yeah, God, it's got to be a horrible thing to get to the end. It's like, what happens when your dreams come true, you know? You keep it to yourself.
But that sense of him being trapped in that house,
yeah,
is so palpable in the last third of the picture, where he's totally removed away from everything. He's lost touch with his son. And also, the thing that he communicates best with, the earth, he's lost touch with that too. I mean, that's when it takes on these kind of tragic implications, or really tragic.
Yeah, we had a scene that we wanted to shoot, but you kind of feel it anyway. We had a scene we wanted to shoot. We just ran out of time. But just to do a simple shot where Daniel, where it was clear that Daniel more or less lived in a tent inside the house, you know, probably with a few buckets around that he could do his business in, you know, and like using the fireplace as a campfire. But that's the idea, yeah, showing that he's probably just very uncomfortable. I made a joke before, but it was true. We had a sort of joke subtitle for the film that was, you know, you can take the boy out of the mine shaft, but you can't take the mine shaft out of the boy. I thought it would have been good if Paramount had gone with that, you know, in subtitles or something like that. But
well, maybe for the French version.
Right.
But I'm fascinated by this because it really is about a man who has no need for people or cities, which had to be a wildly different kind of thing for you to do.
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I remember feeling, for whatever reason, in a very abstract way, God, it would be terrific to make a film outside. And looking at the photographs of the period and the oil fields of California at the time, it was just an irresistible world. And in terms of what might have appealed to me in the past of what to do is a history of my state, is a history of California. I mean, that in itself is irresistible too. So, oh, God, I wish I was back there making that movie right now.
Do you?
It's hard to let go of this one. I mean, I can't tell you the kind of melancholy and romanticism that all of us are having as the film is coming out. You know, we many of us feel like we were still out there working. You know, we shot the film in West Texas near Marfa, and while it was incredibly difficult from time to time, we had such a good time on this film, and I think we're all having a very hard time letting it go. I'd be happier if I was out there right now.
Thank you. That's the nicest thing anybody's ever said.
You're
to
very
me.
Nice, Elvis, but
it's the treatment, my guess, is writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson. His new film, which he can't get out of his bloodstream, is There Will Be Blood. So many of your films have been about people wanting something that they can't have. And this, as you said, is about a guy who, it's that line from, I've been variously attributed to Faust and, you know, Dr. Phil, beware the things you want for you shall have them. But he gets this thing that he wants. And what you're talking about is the pursuit, which, you know, so many artists have made films about or made or painted about or written poetry about, being in the thick of it, you know, getting that thing in your blood that you can't ever get your hands on. You made a movie in a lot of ways about what you do. I mean, this could certainly be a metaphor for the making of art, couldn't it?
Somebody said that the other day, and quite honestly, it never occurred to me. And somebody said, is making a film like Silver Prospecting? And I thought, it's exactly like that. You hack away. You're not really sure what it's going to be worth or if you're going to find anything. And then maybe you find something that you like that gives you an indication that something else might be there. So you figure, well, I could just take this stuff and crawl back up to the top of the hole and go to the SA office and maybe that'll be it. But instead, you think maybe there's even more underneath there. So you light a stick of dynamite, you stick it in, you blow it up, and you just keep after it. I mean, I know that's how I feel, sure, in approaching a film or writing it, making it, whatever it is. Yeah, and then cashing the silver in and finding out what it's worth never really ends up being as satisfying or as fun as it was to be down in that hole.
Is that true? I mean, coming through the tail end of this, is it more the case now than it's ever been, or has it always been, in fact?
It's always been like that. I remember when I first made a film, I didn't quite know where the finish line was. I thought there would be some joy in it getting out there, and there was, but I was completely unprepared for the depression and the melancholy that follows finishing something, which inevitably happens every time I've made a film. I've gotten a little bit better at managing it, and you just have to sort of know it's coming, and, you know, your life changes. Things are different for me now. Obviously, I can't kind of wallow in any kind of self-pity, you know, but it's incredibly difficult to finish something. Probably, A, because you're putting something to rest, and that is its own thing, but B, you're sort of stepping into this enormous fear of, all right, what am I going to do next? I'm too tired to even think about what I want to do next. And it screws with your head a little bit, but I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, I would say, though, that this is the most pointed and straightforward of all your narratives.
I take that as a high compliment. Getting myself into a situation where I'm writing a story that's going to span 30 years, I've already kind of created a situation where I have to be economical, I have to be raw, and I have to be direct about all the ground that the film does have to cover in 2.5 hours. I've got all this stuff that's so exciting to talk about or to look at, the oil fields and the history of California and the oil business and building pipelines and all this stuff, and thinking, how do I get all of this in here? But how do I tell this story, and how do I do it ideally in 2.5 hours? That kind of means you have to be a good secretary to it and organize it so that there is no fat.
I have to ask you this because you've been here. It's been nice. You've been here for each of your films since Boogie Nights, and this is the first time you made a film about fatherhood since you've become a father. And I wonder how that's been different this time around.
Yeah, well, we don't spend as much time in the editing room as we used to. I'll tell you that. I mean, we would never go home, you know, on Boogie Nights. We just sleeping on couches, and that was all that we did. And it's really not like that anymore, you know. Sort of like, all right, come on, we're going home now. That's it. So that's different for sure. Once we got the film together, I mean, shooting the film is different. Essentially, she's going to have to more or less be an orphan for those 3 months, and hopefully somebody will be there to help take care of her. But it was great to finish the film, honestly, when we did, because to get back to being a dad again was great. So when we were cutting the film, we would cut for a couple weeks and then take a few weeks off, and then cut for a few weeks and take a few weeks off, and something we never would have done before. But ultimately, because we had these obligations to the families, really helped us. We didn't get stuck the way we used to. I mean, we wouldn't be able to see the forest or the trees in the old days. I mean, sometimes, and that was kind of a nice to take a step back and not be the center of the universe and not have the film be the center of the universe. And because that baby does not give a about moving. So. It's great.
What a time. P.T., thanks so much for doing this. Always good to see you.
It's great to be back with you.
My guest is director Paul Thomas Anderson, writer-director Paul Thomas Anderson. His new film, There Will Be Blood, an adaptation of Upton Sinclair's Oil. It's a special pledge edition of The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.